Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to a special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. This is Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors, a series that we've been doing here regularly now on all of 2016. And as always, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and alongside me is Bonnie Buell Russick. How are you, Bonnie?
Hey, I'm great. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. We just did an episode a few weeks ago. Got some good buzz on social media about that one. But looking forward to today's interview.
Yeah.
For sure, we got two guests in studio. But what's new with you and your organization?
Oh, we are doing well. Summer, for most businesses, summer tends to be slow. For us, it's pretty much our busiest time of year because the clients we work with, accountants and attorneys, have time to think about marketing and focus on it a little bit. So we kind of get a little bit nuts this time of year, but I am 48 hours away from being on a plane to vacation.
All right.
And I am desperately needed.
All right. Destination unknown, or can you share?
No, destination Aruba.
Well, that will be one heck of a vacation for sure.
Yes, we are very much looking forward to it.
Well.
My husband and I have been working like crazy lately.
Awesome. So. Well, wish you much happiness and a relaxing time on your Aruba vacation. Look forward to catching up with that on our next episode coming up in a few weeks.
Absolutely.
But without further ado, let's introduce today's guest. We have two special ladies in studio today. First, let's say hello to Keely Herrick. How are you, Keely?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And also joining us is Stephanie Everett. How are you, Stephanie?
Great. Thank you.
All right. And so first, back to Keely. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
All right. Well, I grew up in Atlanta. Actually went to high school here. And then I went up to New York for college and law school, both at NYU. So, and then I worked at a big firm there for 8 years. So I was a New Yorker total for 16 years.
Couldn't wait to get out of Atlanta, could you?
You know, I went to a really small private high school here, mm-hmm. so I wanted the exact opposite experience for college, and I definitely
immersed yourself in the big city.
Yeah.
And you enjoyed that.
Oh, I loved it. It was a great place to spend my 20s, I'll say that. And then I actually sort of eat, pray, loved it a little bit. I quit my job, sold my apartment, broke up with my boyfriend at the time, and traveled for a couple of years, and that was pretty fantastic. And then I landed back here in Atlanta.
Wow. And what year was that?
I left in 2010.
Okay.
So then I worked with a boutique firm here for a couple of years. And then last fall, I actually joined my brother and with another attorney, we started our own firm.
An entrepreneur, family, lawyer business. This is going to be good.
Siblings, too.
Right. So you began a law practice with your brother. What type of law are you guys doing, folks?
I am an intellectual property, so a trademark attorney.
Oh.
My brother already had his own firm. He is really a business law attorney. So it's kind of fun that I get to kind of order my big brother around. He's older than I am, but he went to law school after I did.
So. Right. So, he went ahead and got certified after you.
Yes.
Yeah.
He lived in China and has a couple of grad degrees.
I think there's a book in there somewhere about both of you.
Yeah.
I mean, this story is just unraveling quite nicely here. So let's talk about your practice, what you're doing. You're helping trademark law. A little bit more intellectual property. Tell those listeners a little bit more about that, what that exactly means.
So a trademark is your brand. So basically every company has trademarks, whether it's the name of your product or the name, your actual business name. So ideally, we help people early on when they are choosing a name for a new business or a new product. And they come to us and we can, you know, do searches and help them see if there's something out there that they might be infringing on so they can avoid investing a lot of time and money in a brand that they would eventually have to, you know, not be able to use because somebody else owns it. And then on the flip side of that, if somebody else is infringing on your brand, we can go after them and make them stop. So
you would call her before your business launched in some cases, right? And make sure you're...
Ideally, yes.
Yeah. It's amazing to me, you know, so many, we work with some firms that are just kind of launching and, you know, putting together their, you know, like, what are we going to call ourselves kind of questions. And, you know, they come up with a wonderful name and I'm like, we have got to make sure that no one else has that, you know, contact trademark attorneys and, you know, make sure that, you know, you're not, the expense of putting together logos and business cards and all the things that you put together around your name and then to find out that you can't legally use that name is incredible if you think about
it. And people get emotionally attached to their brands and their names too. So, you know,
I can't just Google this name and say this business is available. I actually have to, like, you do due diligence and research and all this stuff.
That's a good first step, I'll say. Okay. But, you know, that's not not a substitute for a real trademark search.
Right. So could you have other channels to explore to really make sure if, you know, companies are registered or patents have been filed or what have you.
Right.
And so, but that's only a small piece of what you do as well. You also do, like, the global thing. And here was what I didn't understand, opposition and cancellation actions. what does that mean?
So, yes, that sounds very exciting. it basically, when you file a trademark application, there is a certain point in the process where somebody can file an opposition against your application. Mm-hmm. So they say, no, I have rights that are prior to yours. So we handle those on either side, whether or not you're the opposer or the defendant. And cancellations are a similar thing. Once your mark is already registered, somebody can come after you and try and cancel your registration, say either you're not using the mark or, you know, something like that. And so we can help defend those or, you know, on the prosecution side as well.
And are there some nefarious businesses out there that just make whole, you know, careers out of trying to start, mimic another industry or another business?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there are.
I know it happens on the website because, you know, people will go out there and just buy a ton of URLs.
Right.
And then, you know, they'll be more than happy to sell it back to you for $5,000 as opposed to the $20,000 that they may have paid for it.
And so it becomes a business decision too, deciding, because I mean, you could go crazy and I could register, you know, kherrick.everything in the world, you know, and you could work yourself into debt doing that, you know, with every country extension and everything. But you really have to make a business plan and decide, you know, how much you're going to invest in that and what the real risk is, you know.
No. Very, very interesting. You know, there's a lot of things you should consider whether you're starting a new business or you're an existing business, no matter what industry you may be in. You need to find out what's going on out there. So we'll get back to Keila here in a moment. Let's bring Stephanie Everett into the conversation. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you here today to Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors.
Yeah, thank you for letting me be here. So I guess I'm a Georgia girl at heart, have been here most of my life, and practiced law since 2002. I started, like Keely, at a big firm and got that experience. And then in 2007, decided to try my own hand at running a business. My father had a business, and I always admired that aspect of his life. So along with a partner, we launched a trial boutique firm. We started, it was the two of us, and we brought my legal assistant with us. So we had a small team. For sure, when we started doing real estate litigation and business litigation. And I loved the business side of it. And in the time that I was there, we grew that firm ultimately to a team of 13 lawyers and 7 staff. And it was that business challenge. I felt like we had to reinvent our business even a couple of times as we existed, because we certainly didn't have it figured out when we first started. We did not know what we were doing. We thought a lot of the things we were getting away from being at a big firm, the bureaucracy and the systems and processes, we were like, we don't need that. We could just go do our own thing. And then a couple of years in, we realized, oh, those were existed for a reason. we actually can benefit from that. And so then we had to go back and put some things in place that we really would have been much better off if we had known that going in. And so then that is really what led me to do what I'm doing now, which is I kind of wear two hats, but I have a consulting firm and I also work with a nonprofit. And in my consulting firm, I work with attorneys who know how to practice law but struggle running their business or want to run their business in a way that allows them to take vacations and do fun things and not be stressed all the time. So
no, and that's something we hear from time to time here in the studio is that you may be a really good lawyer, but that doesn't make you a really good business person. And you need to reach out to help for help in those areas. What are some of the areas you see most attorneys need help the most in with their practice?
Well, to start with, this is going to sound insane to most, but a lot of attorneys forget just what you said, that they own a business. Mm-hmm. And so they forget to put their business hat on at all. And so when they really just think about what kind of business do they want to have, what's their vision, what's their strategy? I had an attorney once tell me, Oh, Stephanie, all consultants just like talking about vision. You people, that do they teach you that in consulting school? Just vision.
The promise of the future, right?
Right. And then he actually had brought me in to do an assessment for his firm. So I went and met individually with all of his employees, attorneys and staff. And do you know what each of them said to me? I don't really know where we're going as a firm. Why are we doing this? Where are we headed? What's the goal here? And it was kind of funny. I was like, oh, that vision stuff, it actually makes a difference, especially when we're trying to build a team. The only way your team knows how to help you get where you want to go is if you tell them where we're going. So I find, unfortunately, for lawyers, we forget some really simple things that most business owners, when you start a business, you really spend a lot of time thinking through on the front end. And because we already have a skill, a trade that we know how to do, we think, well, we can just go and do that. And that's all we really need to think about. And we forget about all the business side of what we're doing. That's really so important.
It's been a real adjustment for me in the last year to give myself credit for the doing work on the business side of things. You know, like I think especially at a big firm, you grow up in this mentality of the billable hour and that is really all that's valuable. But once you do change to owning your own business, you really have to think like, okay, networking is a part of this, and it's valuable that I'm doing that. And I have to not think that that is wasted time or time that I should be billing or something like that.
I agree. And, you know, I think what you do doesn't just apply to law firms. It applies to pretty much anybody that's offering a service or probably even a product-based business. You know, when I started 7 years ago, it was like, oh, you know, I've been marketing for 20 plus years, so I know that. But, you know, then you kind of start realizing that there's so many operational things and things that take much more of your time than you ever think they will, particularly if you don't have that plan in place and, you know where it is you're going and know kind of, you know, who do you want on your team? Do you want to expand? All these so many questions that you have to ask and answer that, you know, I'm sure that your clients are, you know, sometimes overwhelmed and you kind of come in and help them figure these things out so they can do what they do best.
Yeah. And I let my clients know most of the time they should be aiming for about 50% of their time doing what we call technician work, doing the actual practice of law or making that widget or doing whatever it is your business is doing. The other time is spent marketing and growing your business, actually focusing on your business systems and processes and putting things in place that will work for you so you don't have to do everything.
No, it all makes sense for sure. As you know, as good attorneys are often have heads down, focused on that one client or that one case, and the business could suffer if they don't reach out to you. But I imagine that first conversation with you is kind of a painful call that law firm has to make to you because they're in trouble, right? Or do they see this coming and they say, well, you know, we need to bring Stephanie and her services in now before it gets too late?
I wouldn't say they're always in trouble. I mean, ideally, they're just saying, wow, what could we do better or differently? Or I'm in growth mode. You know, I've had some early success. I've built some teams. One of the clients that came to me was like, okay, I've got all these people. We were all working remotely from home, which really worked for everybody for a while. But all of a sudden, he kind of woke up and was like, oh, I have a law firm now. When did that happen?
Right, a real working law firm.
Yeah, everybody was kind of working from home and remoting in when they needed to. They'd get together in a coffee shop once a week. And then all of a sudden it dawned on them. Much like it dawned on me and my partner when we were a couple years out. Oh, those things that the big firm did made some sense. And now we've got to go back in and put some structure in place. So a lot of times, maybe they're in trouble, but I think more they just are looking for something different, something better. They're looking to take more vacation time.
Yeah. So that's good. They're not always in dire needs when they need your services. They could just be looking to grow or expand or, you know, add to their services. And so, Keeley, from your perspective, what's the difference from working in a big law firm, you know, in big city New York, and then kind of owning your own, you know, boutique shop now?
It's really dramatically different. I think that the big firm experience is fantastic starting out. I think there's nowhere else that you're going to be able to be exposed to the variety of industries and clients that you can get at a big firm. Just this, you know, in my experience, the smaller firms, and you know, I myself wouldn't be able to offer that to somebody working with me straight out of law school. You know, and I worked with some really talented, you know, smart people who are at the top of their game. And that's why I stayed for 8 years because I did enjoy the experience I was getting there. But I never really wanted to be a partner at a New York law firm. Like, that was never really my vision of success for myself. So when I did take the time off to reflect and figure out, I didn't even know if I was going to go back to being a lawyer, but I realized that I missed the intellectual exercise of it. And I really enjoy what I do. You know, I'm also a writer and a poet. And so this, what I do is I fight about the differences, you know, in words and sight, sound, and meaning of terms and language. And so that's, it's exciting and it's fun for me. Mm-hmm. So doing it on my own is just, I am much more excited about the marketing side of things when it's your own name out there and getting to make decisions. You know, I'm on the board of a theater company in town, Actors Express. And so deciding that, okay, I'm going to have a marketing event where I'm going to invite, you know, my clients and colleagues and rent out the theater for a night and, you know, getting to decide where I want to spend my money.
So that a little more in charge.
Yeah.
You get to have the vision now.
Yeah.
You get to have the direction that the organization has led to. So how many on staff over there other than your brother?
Like, other than my brother, there's one other attorney.
So one other attorney. Yeah. And what are some of the trends in your industry that you see now? Especially, for my mind, there's a lot going on the technology side and apps and all this. Are you finding a lot more in that area yourself?
Yeah, that, I mean, for us, it's really the sort of expansion of people's selling their products online, right? That makes
e-commerce
a truly global economy. So whereas, you know, when I graduated from school, you could have a truly local business and really only have to consider, okay, you know, I'm selling this t-shirt in Georgia and, you know, at my shop
and that's it.
And that's all I have to worry about.
Whoever drives by.
Right. But if you're, you know, if you're selling something online, you know, that's, you really have to think like, okay, does anybody else who is going to sell this product online through the same channel of distribution, do they have a trademark that's the same as mine? And that, and then from a, you know, when I represent bigger clients, looking at online vendors like eBay and Etsy and Amazon, and people who just make things in their home and, you know, think that they can put a famous trademark on, you know, this product and sell it, you know, and so having to work with those websites to be able to take that stuff down and, you know, explain to people that that's not really just free advertising for the company, that there are people who are licensed and pay licensing fees and, you know.
It's a jungle out there on the interweb, so be careful.
Wow. So I guess what do you see are the biggest challenges or mistakes that new business owners make when they are kind of getting started, and what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, well, I mean, always I say fear of lawyers is a mistake. We're really not so bad. And, you know, like I'm saying, if you, people think, oh, lawyers are so expensive, you know, and I don't want to, it's going to be stressful. I don't want to go through it. And I'm just going to start my business and then worry about protecting my brand later. But that is a big mistake. It's like you could, you know, if you just spend a little bit of money on a lawyer in the beginning, that can really help you avoid some costly mistakes in terms of, you know, what you're calling your product, you know, even like your logo, you know, the stylization of it and just different things that you might not think about. You know, and a lot of people think, oh, if they register their name with the Secretary of State, you know, as a DBA, that is the same thing. And then, oh, then my name's available as a trademark, but that's not, you know, that's not the same process at all. So,
so many pitfalls out there just to get started launching a business. But it's good to know that Keely and her firm over there can help you along the way. For you, Stephanie, I'd like to know any good first steps a young attorney could do now to kind of open up their shop and doing it right. As we heard from Keely, some experiences and maybe you go work at a big law firm to kind of find your way in life. But if you're coming right out of law school and some of our audience may be a young lawyer, listen, what would be some good first steps?
So here's a chance for me to plug what I also do in the other part of my life.
The second hat.
Yeah. So Georgia recognized just that. They said, and not every lawyer coming out of law school is going to have an opportunity to go to a big firm. And also this millennial generation just has such an amazing entrepreneur spirit that we're seeing a lot more younger attorneys who are, you know, starting their own firm, even straight out of law school. And so last year, the Georgia Supreme Court, the State Bar of Georgia, and the five law schools that are located here in our state got together and said, what can we do to help with this problem? Mm-hmm. And the result is an interesting organization with a funny name. It's Lawyers for Equal Justice, but it's a lawyer incubator. So just like you hear of tech incubators, which are all the rage right now, The idea is, let's have a place where we can provide resources, training, and business coaching for these new lawyers who are coming out of school and choosing to start their own firm, so that we can help them. Because law school, while it teaches you to think like a lawyer, I think Keely will agree to me with me that it doesn't really teach you how to practice law day to day. I always say you need to figure out who to mail what to when. If you can figure that out, so, amazingly enough, you'll survive.
Yeah. I always say they need to have a problem-solving class in law school.
Like, yeah.
Just basic problem-solving 101.
Yeah. So there's a lot of lawyering skills you don't really get to learn in law school. You learn in practice. And law school, unfortunately, right now is not teaching folks how to start and run a business.
Yeah.
It's just not their focus, although I'm working to change that.
Yeah. It sounds like you're already on the right step to get that done. And the state is thinking that as well. So that's good news.
Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to teach a course at Emory as an adjunct last semester on the economics of a law firm, and to work with law students to start getting them to think about, even if they're going to go to a firm, they are still going to be a functioning member of a business. So how can we train them in law school to come in and start functioning right away?
Yeah.
So that's what the incubator is doing, is it's really doing two different things. We're training lawyers on and empowering them and giving them a lot of the resources they need to start their business. And we're also trying to challenge them and to use the incubator as a place to experiment with how we can provide a new way of law, practice law in a way that encourages efficiencies, where we drop prices, where we utilize technology, do all the things that you see every other business in the world doing. Sometimes lawyers are bit of dinosaurs.
Some lawyers don't have websites, of what I've heard on this show before.
Indeed.
Yeah. We don't always embrace the technology.
Yeah.
And I think we're missing out on an opportunity, because we can use that in a way that helps our practice, allows us to drop our prices and serve more people.
That's good.
Because the sad truth is that 80% of Georgians, that's right, 80% cannot afford a lawyer.
Yeah.
They make too much to qualify for legal aid, but they simply can't afford what the market rate is.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to help these younger lawyers open up practices that can serve that population.
And you may or may not know the answer to this, but are there more lawyers? Is this a trending kind of profession to go in? Or are we getting less of coming out of college these days?
No. Yeah, there are more lawyers now. The numbers keep rising.
So there's more of them.
More of them.
More services being provided. And that would, in my mind, drop pricing down, you would think, because, competition.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, the American Bar Association has an interesting video out right now that addresses this. And they say, in a way, the lawyers have kind of broken the law of supply and demand. Hmm. And so you would think that that would eventually drive prices down. And I think that's where we're headed. And part of it is the training and resources that lawyers need to think about their prices differently, because it's very hard. I mean, we're trying to change the way it's been done for 100 years, right? I'm trying to encourage people to get away from the billable hour and think about their pricing as value pricing, because we don't sell our time. We provide a huge value to our clients, but it really shouldn't matter whether we spend 20 minutes on it or 10 hours. We need to think about how much, when we think about our pricing, we need to take cues from what our other business partners are doing outside the legal profession. How do they set their pricing? Take some hints from that and learn how to set our pricing accordingly.
That's why I like to do flat fees as much as I possibly can, because that's then I know that I'm spending the amount of time that I need to spend on, a project. And that the billable hour thing has been another big switch for me from working at a firm to working for myself. Now, when I bill some time, I think, great, like, I've made money today. That's fantastic. Instead of, it's a real different perspective shift from always having this number in your head that you're not going to be able to hit, especially as a transactional attorney doing what I do. I'm not a litigator. So when you litigate, you can bill, 12 hours a day on one project. But, doing what I do, that's just not really feasible. So it's just, it's made me a lot happier person. And I do think that really is where the trend is going to be going now, it's better for clients too, certainly.
It's definitely kind of the trend in not just law, but a little bit slower, but we're seeing it also with CPA firms. But there's a lot of people who are really dragging their feet to that are very comfortable with that whole billable hour model. But I mean, in reality, we have a client in outside of St. Louis that's been doing value pricing for a long time. And they're kind of one of the only people in the market that are doing that. And they make more money than in less time, but yet their clients love them to pieces, because when they say, okay, it's going to be X amount to do this service, they know they're going to get billed X amount.
Right.
And it may seem like it's kind of high, but they're like, all right, I know it's going to be that, rather than this whole, like, you know, amorphous, who knows how many hours it's going to be. And then they get a bill that, like, blows them out of the water.
Right.
Well, they're just angry at that, at that vendor. At
and
that
then
point.
One month, it could be one rate, and the next month, the next rate. And that variation does make people uneasy, because you don't know what to expect. And as small businesses, your budgets are not always, you know, bursting at the seams as well. You need to kind of budget accordingly. And sorry, attorney's fees are not often first on the list to say, put aside some money for attorney's fees. But whether a young attorney or an existing company, you think that's a good first step.
Absolutely.
That's good. And also from your perspective in Georgia, we're doing things right. And here in Atlanta, you know, since it's Atlanta's most trusted advisors, we got a city full of attorneys out there. On any given night, you can find them out there at the restaurants and bars. And so how are you guys connecting, and like, how is business finding you these days for your consulting business?
Definitely a lot online and personal one-on-one reputations. I mean, I think most lawyers agree too that my connections are the most valuable asset that I have. Mm-hmm. And so I'm often out there being in front of people, making sure that I'm connecting with folks, letting them know what I'm doing, letting them know what value I can bring, asking them who they might know that would be a good service. I get a lot of referrals from my existing clients, which is the most flattering thing.
Yeah, so you know you're doing good business when your clients are referring you, for sure. And I think that's probably speaks to having a smaller firm. You can be more in touch with your clients on a regular basis. I bet you give them your cell phone number. I mean, I would think that they can call you anytime.
Sure, sure.
And that makes a big difference than with going up with a big firm, which you maybe just feel like somebody in a cube farm just answering the phones or something. So.
Yeah, I think we sell it as big firm experience with, you know, sort of small firm care.
Customer experience is very important. So, and for you, is business coming through networking, getting out there, meeting folks? Again, not a skill most lawyers are adept to, going out there and socializing.
It's something I've been working at for a couple of years. And I did actually, I worked with a coach a couple of years ago. And that was really eye-opening to me, because I always thought, and especially being at a big firm in New York and the billable rate that I had there, you know, I pretty much felt like I had to be born into some sort of dynasty to inherit a client. You know, I mean, to file a trademark application for somebody there, I would have to spend about 2 minutes on it, you know, at the rate that I was billing at. And I only had this vision of legal networking is going to bar events, which wasn't something I was terribly excited about. But when I worked with this coach, she, you know, really helped me open up my mind. And I also thought that if I went to a networking event and I did not come out of it with a new client, then I had failed. I've come to learn that is not a realistic
expectation. That's a home run if you get a new client. Yes.
Right. And I think as lawyers, you know, we're all very type A and have put a lot of pressure on ourselves. So realizing that it is a long game, you know, networking, and just that I can allow myself time to really just develop relationships with people, then I've come to enjoy it, and finding things to do that I enjoy, and that it doesn't all have to be there's not one definition of what it is.
Yeah, you know, so it's a work-life balance. The success of it all doesn't have to be, you know, because you're piling up money by the hour. You know, it could be more. You're just doing good work for good people, and you're really making a difference in people's lives, in businesses for you. And then you're helping people as well and out there networking. But what do you need more of to kind of grow your business? Are you looking for more clients? Are you trying to expand your consulting services?
Yeah, I'm in a great place right now. For the first time this year, I have openings for new clients. So I have a few openings, and I'm out there seeing who wants to start working with me, which is exciting. And then we're also recruiting the next class for Lawyers for Equal Justice. So that next group of new lawyers will have up to 12 spots available for the incubator, and they'll start in November.
And if people want to find more information about that, or a young lawyer want to get involved?
You can check out our website. So I'll give you two. My consulting website is everettconsultingatlanta.com. Mm-hmm. Did not get help with that, so I probably could have gotten shorter. And the lawyersforequaljustice.org, and it's for F-O-R, so lawyersforequaljustice.org.
Yeah, so if you want to get information about it, you know, getting involved there, or get some of Stephanie's services over there, consulting, or maybe they have some info, or just want to ask you a few questions if they want to, you know, get ready to open up their own shop there, and maybe they can connect with you and
Yeah. And if you're an existing business owner and you would love to come in and maybe do a training session with our newer lawyers, you have something to add there. We bring in guest speakers weekly and we're really trying. And we
into
would,
your office?
Into the incubator
Go
office.
Into the incubator
and
office.
And we would love non-lawyers. I love to get, you know, business folks out there that are thinking about their business differently to come in and tell us how they do that.
So an entrepreneur or somebody who's out there running a successful organization, not even in the legal arena, just come out and talk about how you've kind of carved your path. And that's good good for the students there.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Oh, that's awesome. So Bonnie, maybe you should go out there and speak a little
Absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely.
Good. All right. And Keely, tell our listeners how they can find out more information about your organization.
You can go to our website, which is kherricklaw.com.
kherricklaw.com. Mm-hmm. That's two R's, ladies and gentlemen. And you can get on the information there that you need. And what's next for you and your organization?
I'm just keeping on keeping on. I mean, in 2015, I started the firm. I bought a house and I got married. So,
yeah, okay.
And I've been, you know, before that, always sort of commitment phobic. So
it's all downhill from now.
This year, it's wonderful, but this year has been a little bit of recovery and going, oh my gosh, what happened? You know, so it's great, but yeah, I'm just, you know, really excited to, you know, build the business and keep going from here.
So look for more there, ladies and gentlemen. You can find her working hard at her desk there, or with her new husband, or a new house, or at the Actors Express.
That's
She's involved with the theater there, so you can find Keely all about town for sure. We'll have
also, if you want to go to my LinkedIn page, I also have a blog where I post once a month with some sort of trademark article, and I include a photo of one of my cats, which is like just to make the law medicine go down a little bit more smoothly.
Yeah.
I got a little
Do you allow cats in the office?
Well, they're in my home. Yes. Yeah. They're my assistants. Okay. So, you know.
That's how you know. That's the measure if you're running a successful business, if dogs in the office.
Right.
We have two in the office. Nice. Stephanie has met them. So. Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you both, Stephanie and Keely, for joining us here today on Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. Please come back and be a guest soon. If you have any new exciting information to share, we'll be happy to feature you again here. And Bonnie, good luck and have fun in Aruba. Be safe.
Thank you.
Right? Just do nothing, hopefully. That's kind of the goal, right?
That's pretty
Enjoy
much the
life.
Goal. Yes.
Good. Good. Enjoy life. And then we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. Until then, you can go to AtlantaBusinessRadio.com to hear past episodes. And if you and your company is out there doing something interesting to generally serve your market, your community, and your profession, and would like to be featured on the show, pitch us your story at BusinessRadioX.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We'll see you on the radio.